The explosive new film, Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost, exposes secrets behind the government's takedown of General Michael Flynn.
Flynn knew what the intel world had been up to.
He ordered the first audit of the use of contractors. This set off alarm bells.
He told the truth. He was the most dangerous person for Donald Trump to hire. They had to get rid of Flynn.
Flynn, Deliver the Truth, Whatever the Cost. Available now. Watch it today. Go to SalemNow.com. SalemNow.com.
Show.
Hey, for you Eric Metaxas trivia buffs out there, Eric's Secret Service code name is El Jerko.
Please make note of it.
And now the man who'll deny it, but it's true anyway.
Here's El Jerko himself.
My friend Eric Metaxas.
Hey there, folks. Welcome back. This is what we like to call Hour 2 of the Eric Metaxas Show. We are under federal guidelines to call it Hour 2. You and I both know you can listen to it anytime you want. You can listen to Hour 2 before Hour 1. Just don't let the federal authorities know that you've done it, because they will get to you. I have the joy of continuing my conversation with Molly Hemingway of The Federalist. Molly, welcome back.
Great to be here with you.
It would be fun to talk about Joe Biden, just because it's always fun to talk about Joe Biden. We can talk about Corn Pop. We can talk about the razors that we used to use in those days, the straight razors. What are you thinking these days about Joe Biden?
I think he's actually in a very difficult position. It's hard to campaign when there are no chances to have any public events, from donor events to rallies. On the other hand, he kind of seemed like he wanted to be off the public stage.
I was going
to
say, doesn't it redound to his benefit that he can't? It's kind of like he can't make gaffes. There's a guardrail called the shutdown, and he cannot drive off the cliff.
Yes, that's the benefit. But the downside is primaries are being canceled. He can't have that slow drip or the momentum building that leads you to a convention, which is a big part of generating enthusiasm and getting voters on board. And then also he has this issue of a sexual assault allegation coming out against him, you know, as he's trying to secure all the delegates he needs to wrap up the nomination.
I have to say, it will probably surprise some people. I have, a confused reaction to the sexual assault allegations, because it's the kind of same thing that seems to happen all the time, that allegations come out, and it's become just a political weapon. In other words, the idea that this woman is bringing something up that happened almost three decades ago. I say, as someone who does not, I'm not a fan of Joe Biden, but it does seem, you know, bizarre to me that you say nothing for all this time, or that you don't speak about it publicly when it happens, because you have respect, out of respect for the senator. That's what she said at the time. And then she brings it up now. It seems completely plausible. But it's just, we're living in such confused times. I don't know what to make of it. In other words, I want to be fair in the sense that when they bring this up against Kavanaugh at the last minute, now the difference is in the Kavanaugh case, it was complete nonsense. But even when it's true, when it's from so long ago, I just think that we've really devolved into the ugliest, basest way of conducting, politics.
Right. I think that's absolutely correct. And it's important that people understand that when accusations are made, the accused is presumed innocent until such time as the evidence makes you reach a different conclusion, whether that's happening in a court of law or just in your own critical thinking. But it's very important that we understand due process and presumption of innocence. What is fascinating is that we have a media who seem to have rediscovered this, in that they are working so hard to defend, almost as if they're defense lawyers, Joe Biden against this accusation coming from a former employee of his. He may not be guilty and he should be presumed innocent, but the media are definitely guilty in how they're covering this. And I think it was just not even 2 years ago when they threw every standard of due process or decency out the window in an attempt to not just keep Brett Kavanaugh from being confirmed to the United States Supreme Court, but to destroy his very life. You know, this is a father, a husband, he has young daughters, and media all engaged in a group activity in an attempt to destroy his life. So then when you see with Joe Biden, someone puts forth an accusation that this is not a high bar by any stretch of the imagination, but is a stronger accusation than the one levied against Brett Kavanaugh in that she actually met the person she's accusing. She has evidence that she told people at the time of the alleged incident. And there's actually quite a bit of evidence that she definitely told people in the early 90s that this happened. That is so much stronger than anything that happened with Brett Kavanaugh, where his accuser had no evidence that she'd ever met him. And the four witnesses that she named all said they had no idea what she was talking about. Her best friend from childhood said, "I actually don't believe her story." You know, she had a history of saying false things, like she was afraid to fly when she's not, and when she was like flying all the time so that she could avoid coming out to D.C. to give her testimony. So the media had no trouble at all, not just believing Christine Blasey Ford, but using her story to destroy a man that they didn't like. But with Joe Biden, a man that they clearly have political affinity for, with a stronger story from someone who at least told people at the time and has evidence that she met him, they're like, "Oh, I don't really believe this one." Well, that's fine if they hadn't done what they'd done to Brett Kavanaugh just two years ago. They weaponize the Me Too movement, and it's so obvious and it's so disgusting, actually, that they need to be held accountable for it.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, and this is, of course, what we should be focusing on is the sickening double standard in a free culture to have a press that is so biased that they're unwilling even to ask him. I mean, I don't know how many morning programs he was on this past Sunday from whatever bunker he's in. It is hilarious to me that none of them was willing to broach this utterly legitimate at this point subject with him, if only to give him an opportunity to defend himself or to say something.
Well, not just that. When Carrie Severino and I wrote our book, Justice on Trial, about the Kavanaugh confirmation, we interviewed so many people who were involved in the story, including people who are not public, but who publicly defended Brett Kavanaugh, people who were friends in high school or college or, you know, that type of person. They received so much animosity from the media for speaking out in defense of their friend, Brett Kavanaugh, that they all told us horrifying stories about what that was like. Meanwhile, you have former Senator Hillary Clinton, former presidential candidate endorsing Joe Biden, former President Obama endorsing Joe Biden. Nobody's asking any tough questions of these people. You know, they're not, they are people who are used to or should be used to having been asked tough questions. All those senators who are in Joe Biden's party, they could be asked a ton of tough questions. Nancy Pelosi, no questions, none at all. Or they're phrased in such a way as to just be perfunctory at the end of an interview, like, "Would you like to dismiss this story from Tara Reid, Joe Biden's accuser? Would be happy to help you do that." They're nothing like the media onslaught that Brett Kavanaugh and his advocates faced.
Well, I feel like, and that's a great point. Tell us the title again of the book with Carrie Severino.
Justice on Trial, The Kavanaugh Confirmation and the Future of the Supreme Court.
We have people who are interested in my interview with you and Carrie on that. They can look at our YouTube page, The Eric Metaxas Show. Very important conversation that we had together some months ago, and very, very important book, Justice on Trial. I just want to ask you, it seems to me that the Tara Reid accusations are almost a welcome distraction from the actual campaign of Joe Biden. In other words, I cannot imagine that at this point, he is a viable candidate. He seems like a husk. He seems like someone who, every time he speaks, just becomes lost in his own sentences. I still have this conspiracy theory that the party mandarins, the elders, are eventually going to figure out a way to push him aside and to replace him with someone whom they think can beat Trump.
It's not an insane thought. I mean, when you look at how much they tried not to get behind him, only doing so when it was down to him versus Bernie Sanders, then finally did Obama and everybody else say, "Okay, we got to push this guy over the finish line," but they didn't want to. And so the problem with pushing him aside now is that you still have a Bernie Sanders problem. And I'm not sure they want to go down that road, but you have to just think sensibly. Yes, Trump is vulnerable. And yes, a lot of people don't want to vote for him and they'll vote for a, you know, corn husk of anybody. But they, it might not, who knows? I don't know what they'll do, but I'm sure the Democratic Party is not elated by what's going on.
We're going to go to a break, folks. We will be back for another long segment with Molly Hemingway. I know you won't go away. I'm not even going to ask you not to go away, because why would you? Hey, folks, welcome back. It's the Eric Metaxas Show. We're all in our respective bunkers. As you know, my bunker is 3 miles vertically below the Earth's surface, so I'm safe. I need to be here. I have enemies. Molly, I don't know where you are. I see daylight shining through the blind behind you. You're obviously someplace above ground.
Yes, for the time being. I actually work from home typically, so this entire quarantine has not been that different, with the exception that my children are home and I have to manage all of their Zoom meetings for school. But other than that, it's largely the same.
Man, don't ever have kids. I could have told you. Okay, so but this is the most important thing. Behind you, it looks like there's some kind of a cat painting. Is yes. that, did you do that? Whose painting
oh,
is
it? No, I don't know. I just found this and I love this kitty cat, and I don't have any pets, so this is my substitute for the time being.
And I love the porcelain bunny. It looks like braced against the light, being blown back by the
it
by
is the light. It is the base of the light.
Oh, is the base of the light. Well, there you go.
Yeah,
he's used to it. Well,
by
look,
the way, if I'm doing
more about Joe Biden and my conspiracy theory, were you just going to say something? I'm sorry.
I was going to say, if I'm doing more video chats, I'm definitely going to like curate my bookshelf so I have like the best books that make me seem really erudite, and like I'm gonna work on that for the future.
All of my books, which I know you have, but they're probably so well thumbed they hardly hold together anymore. I know. Well, listen, let's talk about Joe Biden. My crazy theory all along has been that Hillary Clinton has been waiting in her crypt to come out. And she knows that she was born for this moment. She knows that America longs for her to be the first female president and to take us away from the madness of economic sanity and good leadership. And I just have this crazy idea that she, maybe with Andrew Cuomo as her running mate, would be wheeled out and forced on the Democratic, electorate and say, look, we want to win. We can no longer win because the Tara Reid stuff is plausible and or whatever it is. But it just seems to me that this is something that I can easily see happening just because of how nefarious Hillary is.
Right. It has a certain goodness to it in that there are a lot of people who love Hillary Clinton and would love to vote for her again. And there are a lot of people who felt a highlight of their life was watching her lose in 2016. So it could bring joy to large groups of people to have the same matchup as was had in 2016. But I don't know. I think there are so many obstacles. The Democratic Party actually has more control over the delegate process than the Republican Party does. It's kind of the opposite of what you might think. I don't know if they have that enough control to be able to force something like that. I think a lot of people were talking about Andrew Cuomo, particularly early on before New York became sort of the place where all the bad stuff was happening with coronavirus. Although the media seemed to think that that's no problem, no barrier for his future political rise. That the guy who's been governor for 10 years and so really is responsible for any preparation or lack thereof for the coronavirus pandemic, is somehow having a really good moment. I don't know if the rest of the country shares the media's viewpoint on his control of the situation there, but the media
definitely loves the whole thing's ridiculous. Just to give you a little context, about 4,000 years ago, there was a guy named Beto O'Rourke, and everybody was getting behind him. He was obviously born for the presidency. So the fecklessness of the media is it's just so extraordinary that I think that they will go with whoever, you know, whoever the chattering classes are talking about yesterday or this morning. You know, it doesn't really matter. But I guess if there were anyone nefarious enough to pull whatever strings can be pulled, I would say Hillary Clinton is that person. And so I still don't I don't think it's impossible for something bizarre like that to happen, because I think let's be honest, Joe Biden, whatever polls say, he can't possibly win. He has presented himself so tremendously poorly that I just think a lot of people are going to stay home. And you know that the Bernie voters are going to stay home.
Well, I don't know. Again, what you said earlier kind of applies here, though. He's off the stage. The less people see of him, the more they think of him as the Joe Biden of old, the more moderate, less extreme as he's become guy who seemed kind of friendly, who was with Barack Obama, a guy they generally like. So the more he can stay off the stage, the better it can be for him. The problem really seems to be when he's speaking. And it's not like Donald Trump is some, you know, like these are two men who really struggle with sentences sometimes. But yes, there's a complete difference in their struggles. Whereas Donald Trump is kind of circuitous in the way he talks. He really seems to process information and, you know, be able to handle like hours long press conferences. Joe Biden seems to weaken minute by minute. We saw that in the debates. We see this even with his daily press briefing or, you know, non-press briefings that he's having in his home. There are struggles. I mean, struggles that I think we're all familiar with when you can't quite capture the word or, and it's not, you know, it might not be a barrier, but I think it doesn't quite give the confidence you want when you're thinking about making a switch in a presidency, particularly a switch back to an old way of doing things that has kind of been rejected.
I knew I could count on you for some actual context. I hate you for that. I wanted you to just run with my conspiracy theory, but what are you going to do? Hey, speaking of conspiracy theories and nightmares, let's talk about General Flynn for a moment. Where are we with that?
Just interesting. This is a guy who pled guilty to lying to the FBI about a conversation he had with Russian Ambassador Kislyak. It was a weird plea because a lot of people didn't, you know, even the people who interviewed him at the FBI didn't think he was lying. It seemed like he might have been pressured into doing this, reporting that he was pressured into doing it because he was worried about legal vulnerabilities of one of his children. But the defense or the prosecution has not been having a particularly good time in recent weeks. And right now we've got judges considering different things, including release of information that some have said is exculpatory for Mike Flynn. We learned yesterday that his previous attorneys, who already were kind of known to have not done a particularly good job, had forgotten to turn over thousands, like 7,000 pages of documents that were relevant to a question of whether Flynn had had good counsel or not when he was previously served by Covington, is the name of the law firm. And so things look very interesting for Mike Flynn at the moment. He you know, he already pled guilty. It's very difficult for anything to change once you've pled guilty, but the prosecution might be having such a bad time of things that they might, we might actually see something dramatic happen.
I think Trump is brilliantly playing poker here. And when he wins his second term, he will pardon Flynn and renominate him to the position that he ought to have had. And it will be scorched earth with Trump's enemies. Just a thought.
I think he'll be pardoned if he needs to be pardoned. But at this point, the legal process itself might take care of the situation. So that would, of course, be preferable to you'd want the legal system to understand if errors have been made and to correct things. Now, if they don't, I think a pardon is probably beyond, you know, I think that would very likely happen. But for his sake, for Flynn's sake, it would be nice to have exoneration in the courts.
But you don't think that the president would renominate him to that position and say, hey, let's do it again. Let's go.
I don't know. I think he's very happy with his current national security advisor. But yes, that would be kind of interesting and very a nice circular Trumpian thing to have happen in the second term.
I tell you, I think the way he has been treated, I mean, I've spoken to this a few times, but that if I hated him because of the way he has been treated, I would, just because of the way I am, sympathize with him and ultimately side with him, because I've never seen anything like it. the viciousness of his enemies has been, to my mind, in some cases, really despicable.
Well, he and Carter Page stand out as the two people who really were most wronged by this treasonous collusion conspiracy theory that the media and certain intelligence officials peddled to the American people. But, you know, with Carter Page, it really is just a horrible thing. Innocent Americans spied on and having everything gone through by his government for more than a year, having his name trashed. And that's really bad. With Mike Flynn, you know, again, whatever you think of him, and I know people who like him or don't like his policies or whatnot, this guy's a general who served his country very well, who was the victim of a criminal leak of classified information by government attorneys. They peddled it to David Ignatius at the Washington Post. He reprints it, accuses him of a Logan Act violation, sets off a whole string of events, and it was really just horrible.
Well, as I say, I think that, you know, to use the cliche, the chickens are going to come home to roost. We have seen things in the last few years that we have never seen. I mean, just imagine the idea that we are speaking about a government collusion narrative peddled to take down a president. I mean, did we make that up? No, that happened. I really think, you know, people are going to have to pay for that one way or the other. I'm so sorry we're out of time. Molly Hemingway, it's just great to have you here. We'll get you back as soon as possible. Thank you so much.
Sounds great. Take care.
Christian bestselling author and speaker Richard E. Simmons does not shy away from the big questions of life. His latest book is called Reflections on the Existence of God, and it tackles the biggest question of all, does God exist? I've read this book, and I got to tell you, I'm a little biased, but you can imagine that I like it a lot because Simmons offers insights for those grappling with life's biggest questions. Where do we find meaning in life? Who determines what is evil? Can we be moral without God? Does God even exist? Former White House aide Wallace Henley says, I've taught apologetics for many years and I've read every scholar mentioned in this book. Of all the books on apologetics, Simmons is the best I have ever read. This book is easy to read because it's divided into a series of brief essays, perfect for a devotional or discussion with a friend. I highly recommend that you add a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God to your pandemic reading list. Simmons asks questions that speak directly to one of the most important things you possess, your worldview. Folks, you know how important this is to me. Your worldview is going to impact the way you live your life for better or for worse. If you want to challenge yourself to spiritual and intellectual growth, and I hope you do, then be willing to ask yourself life's toughest questions. Dive in today by picking up a copy of Reflections on the Existence of God right now. Go to existenceofgodbook.com. That's existenceofgodbook.com.
It was early morning yesterday. I was up before the dawn. But I must be moving on. Like a king without a castle.
Hey folks, welcome to the Eric Metaxas Show. Guess what? Yes, yes. As I've told you, here it is. I get to talk to Diane Ladd, the Diane Ladd. Ms. Ladd, welcome to the program. I'm just thrilled to get to talk to you and about this wonderful movie.
Thank you. Thank you, Eric, very much.
Now, this movie is the last. Say it again.
I said, indeed, it is a wonderful, it's magnificent movie.
Yes.
It's one of the best movies I have ever been privileged to be a part of.
Now, if you don't mind my asking, you've been a part of so many movies. I will have already told my audience about your career and the accolades. So when you make a statement like that about this movie, and we're talking about the last full measure, what is it about this movie that makes you speak about it in such terms?
Number one is the truth in it, the truth in the script. We get so much stuff handed to us today that's far apart from truth. And this film is a true story about Vietnam. And the thing is, it's about greed and corruption. And there's a lot of that flowing over us every day on television. We are just hounded with statements that are not always true, whether it's a pill that can save you or it's a product that can help you. I think that the people who checked ethics and morality for advertisements should start checking up what they're doing lately. But the whole thing is that this film refreshes you. Even the pain in it, and it's a film, by the way, that men love. The grown men, I have seen grown men cry in this film. But it's a release. And afterwards, you feel inspired to fight for some great beliefs and truths. And I get to play, to portray the mother of the young dead hero. And with the great actor Chris Plummer is the dad. And there's some other fantastic, incredible actors in this film. Samuel Jackson and Sebastian Stan is one of the stars who goes to all the Vietnam vets. And those are played by William Hurt as well as Samuel. And Ed Harris, his wife Amy Madigan is in it. And it's Peter Fonda's last film. And there are other just wonderful portrayals. Todd Robinson, a great writer-director, put this together and gave his all to this film. He worked on it many, many years before he brought it before the camera and now before the audience. We've lost our theatrical release because of COVID. So it just went directly to digital and to Blu-ray. So you can buy it or rent it. But get your family together that you can, and you want to just get out of your body to be involved in seeing someone else's life. Is like one of the great novels of all time. And you will, I promise you, enjoy this movie.
Well, I interviewed the director and was my appetite was already whetted just by talking to him, as you can imagine. It is a fascinating story. And as you said, it's a true story. There's something about true stories. When you know that this isn't, you know, just done for entertainment, but that this actually is telling a story of an injustice and of the fire that it took to right this wrong. Now, the cast is spectacular. Even if you were not in the cast, I would say it's just a shockingly impressive cast. I mean, to have Ed Harris, obviously you mentioned Peter Fonda, Samuel Jackson, and William Hurt, and if that's not enough, Christopher Plummer. I mean, my goodness, it's almost funny that so many great actors were able to be lured to work in this wonderful film.
They were lured by a great script. You know, I had lunch with the director, and he was wonderful, and we talked. He gave me the script to read. And the minute I read it, you look for a script like this to be part of. Your whole work, your life, your modus operandi for being an actor waits for the universe to bring you a script like this to help fulfill your own destiny. That's what we do for each other. We serve each other, whether it's flipping a pancake or making a movie. And it was such a privilege to do this film. My husband, Robert, always says, if somebody walks out of this picture and they're not crying, don't trust them. And he's right.
It's interesting because there's something about male heroism in particular, it's been denigrated in the last 30 or 40 years. Men are always kind of put down. When you see this kind of heroism, it's just, it is extremely moving. It's undeniably moving. You know, at 9/11, when you saw these firefighters going up into that building, you want to cry, because to me, it's the very picture of love, giving your life for others, for strangers, because you know it's the right thing to do. It is very moving. We're gonna go to break, but we have one more segment, folks. I have the privilege of speaking with Diane Ladd. I know you won't go away, so I won't tell you not to. We'll be right back. Hey, folks, welcome back. I'm talking to the, I hesitate to say, legendary actress. Forgive me, Diane Ladd. But you have been in so many iconic films. Your first film, your first big film, Alice Doesn't Live Here Anymore, directed by Martin Scorsese. It seems to me you began your career with a bang, because most young actresses don't stumble on a director like Scorsese, because Martin Scorsese wasn't Martin Scorsese in 1974. Nobody knew that he would be the director of, you know, all the films he's directed. Pardon me?
Whoa, Eric. Hey, wait a minute. Before I got a film with Marty, I was a New York actress struggling, passing out fruitcake to pay the rent. I was 17 years old. I did off-Broadway. I got to star in Tennessee Williams' play, which I was his cousin. But he didn't say, oh, there's my cousin, give her a part. The point is, I went after this part and helped make a play he'd been trying to make for 20 years, a hit. But I was struggling, and my first film, which ironically, The Circle of Our Lives, it's sometimes you look at the big picture and you think we're all one person, maybe. And Peter Fonda, well, this is his last film. Such a great actor and a wonderful human being. Peter was in my first picture. I did a motorcycle movie. My ex-husband, Bruce Dern, and I starred in a motorcycle movie, a Roger Corman film. Roger Corman gave all of us breaks. And it was with Peter Fonda and Nancy Sinatra. It was called The Wild Angels. And it won an award at the Venice Film Festival. And in fact, England, who had refused to allow Marlon Brando's great The Wild Ones be shown in their country, when they released Wild Angels, everybody said, whoa, wait a minute. If you're showing, wait a minute, Robert? Oh, no, I saw my dog out in the front yard, but the dog walker's got him walking. My mother instinct immediately jumped up, forgot all about this interview. I saw my little dog. I thought, wait a minute. The dog walker's got him out there letting him walk around. But Wild Angels, when they saw that it was playing, they said, you got to let Marlon's movie, The Wild Ones, play. So Marlon said he appreciated me and Bruce coming into the business and getting his movie, The Wild Ones, being shown. But Peter Fonda was in that.
I was going to say, who knew that Roger Corman had a hand in helping Marlon Brando? That's actually funny. You've worked with everyone, it seems to me.
Roger Corman not only had a handle in helping Marlon Brando, he gave, bye honey, I'm waving goodbye to my husband. He gave everybody a break. Robert Redford, Peter Bogdanovich shot me against a tree. I was one of the first actresses or actors that Peter ever filmed. He made his debut as second unit in Roger's film, Shooting Me Against a Tree. But the fact that when Peter died after this last Full Measure film, I saw my life like bookends from Wild Angels to the last Full Measure. What last Full Measure is a quote from Lincoln that says, any man who gives up his life for another man has fulfilled the last Full Measure. And that's what this film is about. I mean, remember, any time there's been a war, the Americans have all pitched together, and the instincts of my American people are great instincts. You know, I live out here in a little mountain town. It's quite beautiful with orchards all around me. And I got sick every year for a couple of years, and I didn't know why. And I found out that the chemical companies are enticing our farmers all over America to spray with poison. So here I go make the last Full Measure, and I portray this woman who gave up her son for all of us, that he may save someone he didn't even know, 21 years old or 24, and he was young with a whole life going to be a doctor, good-looking, a girl that he loved, engaged. He gave it all up to save a fellow human being. And now where I'm living, some of my fellow farmers, my fellow human beings, are spraying me with poisons like a cockroach and not caring if I live or die. They're spraying, a Roundup has got poison in it, and it hurts the intestines, and they're spraying us like mad. I'm sorry, and I'm really angry about it. They're doing it all over. They've almost ruined Florida. And, you can spray a bug, but if you go get your home sprayed, you're not going to leave the kids in the house while you're spraying them. So anyway, here I am thinking my acting instinct is to show justice and fair play. Took them 3 decades, 30 years to get justice for the boy in this film. But they did it. They worked together and they did it. With light and love, they did it. And that's what this film is about. It's about fulfilling your dreams. You look at you, Eric. You have a dream and you fulfilled it. And now I get to meet you and talk to you, and you get to help me tell people about this magnificent movie. This is how it works when we do it right. I'm being very today.
Interviewing you is just one of my dreams. I have other dreams to fulfill, but I know what you mean, and it's a beautiful thing. I'm so impressed with the idea that they were willing to fight for so long for justice in this case. It really is. It's a beautiful story. It's an honest story. I have to ask you kind of an obvious question. What was it like to work with Christopher Plummer? My goodness.
God, Chris is great. He's so, so elegant. And he's an actor's actor. He loves what he's doing. He's like a doctor who rushes in to do the surgery because he wants to save your life. His motives for performing are the true heart of an actor's actor. And I really enjoy working with Chris so much.
Well,
it was great.
I just wish I could talk to you so much longer. Just the idea that you're cousins with Tennessee Williams, I could get an hour out of that. But I'm not going to bother you anymore. We're just so grateful, Diane, to have you.
I just want to God bless everybody going through the COVID experience that we're doing right now. And just keep that joy in your heart. I surround every one of you with so much love and beautiful light. And just keep that joy in your heart right now, no matter what. And be kind to anyone in that house with you. Remember to be kind. That's the saving grace, and that's the joy.
That is a good word. Thank you for that. And thank you for your time. Congratulations on this spectacular film. God bless you.
God bless you. Bye-bye.
Folks, how about that Diane Ladd? Holy cow.
Wow.
Before we close for the day, my goodness, what a day. Diane Ladd, John Zmirak, Molly Hemingway, and tomorrow, I mean, we have so many people, Pat Boone, it just goes on and on. We've been getting some amazing guests. Maybe we should never go back to the studio. What do you think? I don't know.
Let's just stay in our own little bunker.
No, but it is kind of funny. We've had some wonderful guests, particularly recently. I want to remind my listeners, if you don't mind, and maybe some of you do, forgive me, but because we're all going through a tough time, I want to remind you particularly about our sponsors, Mike Lindell and MyPillow. MyPillow.com will give you a whopping discount if you put in the code Eric or Metaxas. And I want to say this is from experience. There's something I almost would say it's sorcery, except I know Mike is a Christian. There's something about the products that the moment you get near either the pillow, the mattress topper, the sheets, any of those things, consciousness, as it were, becomes a thing of the past.
Yeah.
Sleep just descends in such a way that if you're not prepared for it, it could be bad.
Yeah, we have his towels. We have his towels too.
Has given us what's that?
We have his towels too, and you just look at them and you get dry.
You look at them and you're dry. I don't know what's going on, and it's some kind of stolen technology, obviously. But If you go to mypillow.com and put in Eric or Metaxas, you get a huge code. Mike is an American hero. If you disagree with me, let me just point out you're wrong. Okay, now also, speaking of heroes, Pete and Seth Talbot, the folks behind Relief Factor, they are the makers of Honor Bound Coffee. Honorboundcoffee.com gives 100%. That's not a typo. I didn't misspeak. 100% of their profits to helping military families. If you watch my interview with Pete and Seth Talbot, they explain all this. These are incredible people, father-son team. And, you know, I guess we should do a commercial about this, but the question is, where do the profits from the coffee company that you patronize, where do they send their profits? I hate to tell you, but most of them are using those profits from the money that you spend on causes that you probably don't agree with. So it seems to me, if it's possible, Honor Bound Coffee would be a great choice. You go to honorboundcoffee.com.
Tell them Eric sent you.
And don't forget that the coffee is delicious. Like, I don't want to just say, like, get it because they give the profits to military families. Oh, before we go, if you're looking for something to watch, nosafespaces.com. Go. It's been banned on Netflix and on Amazon Prime, which proves to you it's great. So if you go to nosafespaces.com and use the code SAVE25, you will save 25%. Nosafespaces.com. I think it should be like practically mandatory viewing for every American. If you care about free speech, it's great. I mean, I watched it. It was just wonderful. And also the folks.
Patterns of Evidence.
I was going to say, the folks who put together Patterns of Evidence, if you go to patternsofevidence.com, they are putting their stuff online. This is great stuff. Patternsofevidence.com. You can see about the historicity of the Exodus, the timing, the details. We need to know what we believe. So patternsofevidence.com. You just, you know, you can check it out anywhere. But I highly recommend it. NoSafeSpaces.com. You can use Save 25 and PatternsOfEvidence.com. This is just great stuff. If you're looking for something spectacular, we're out of time. Thank you for joining us today.